Hi, I'm Susie Larson. Thanks so much for listening to this podcast from Live the Promise. There are many more podcasts available up on the website at myfaithradio.com, and your support makes this possible. Thank you.
Joined us today. This is Bill Arnold sitting in for Susie Larson, and this is Live the Promise. We're here to help you engage in a strong and active walk of faith. And of course, that would be not a weak and lazy one, but a strong and active one, which I'm guessing we all suffer from time to time. So happy Friday. Welcome to Live the Promise. So what have I been recovering from lately? Only my 40th high school reunion, Matt. I don't even want to go there with you, but I knew it was reunion time when I went to the local drugstore and they were sold out of teeth whitening strips and various trusses. That's when I knew it was reunion time. But I did personally do the teeth whitening strips and it did make my teeth whiter, but they're also getting smaller. I think that stuff is dissolving my teeth. I'll end up with those little chiclets in my mouth. Won't be pretty, but they'll be white. So we've got a great guest on the program today. We're going to talk to Mike Bechtel. He wrote a book called I Wished He Had Come With Instructions, The Woman's Guide to a Man's Brain. So, Matt, get out your man card, put it on the table. I've got mine out as well, and we will have those evaluated today, and we'll find out if Mike will allow us to put them back in our pockets at the end of the hour. But Mike has written more than one book. His first book was called People Can't Drive You Crazy If You Don't Give Them the Keys, How to Communicate with Confidence, and You Can't Text a Tough Conversation. His articles have appeared in publications such as Writer's Digest, Pastors.com, and Entrepreneur. He's a frequent speaker. He's a pastor, and you can reach him at MikeBechtel.com. That's MikeBechtle. And so the big question is, The Woman's Guide to a Man's Brain, I Wished He Had Come With Instructions. What is he thinking? Mike, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much. Great way to spend a Friday afternoon for me.
I couldn't agree more. I read your book, and I laughed, and I thought, this is really good information, and it's insightful, and it's not threatening, and it's, I don't even know where to begin. Let's start with, first of all, Susie's show, we always want to start with a passage of scripture that's living in your heart right now, something that God's laid on your in your heart in the last week or month or anything you've been thinking about lately.
Well, you know, actually, I think it's one of my favorite verses, which is Micah 6:8. And it's the one that says, He has shown you, O man, what is good. What does the Lord require of you? To do justly, to love mercy, and to walk humbly with God. And I think the thing that stands out to me in that is that most of us spend a whole lot of time trying to figure out what is God's will for my life. What does he want me to do? And the more I wander around in scripture, the less I see where he specifically says, this is my will. But when it happens, we should probably pay attention. And this is one place where he says, so what does the Lord require? I thought, okay, this one should be good. And I saw three things. To do justly, which to me has to do with justice, with living with character, living with integrity, to the way that we live, do justly, so it's our actions.
Mm-hmm.
And then to love mercy, which is, you know, how do you treat each other? How do you interact with other people? Which I think I like that because it's such a foundation for almost everything I write, which goes back to kindness. And I think of the verse that talks about, you know, we were attracted to God. He drew us because of his, it was because of his kindness that drew us to him. And then the last one is fits right in. He had to walk humbly with God. And I like the humbly part, which means he's God and we're not. And if we can keep that in perspective, we may be doing okay.
Mm-hmm. So if we had a short elevator ride, tell me how you came to faith in Christ.
I actually grew up in a Christian home. I was one of God's grandchildren until my mid-teens when I finally realized I needed to do it for myself. And so it wasn't that foreign. It was just a matter of recognizing that it wasn't just because my parents were Christians and we went to church, but this was a personal relationship with a personal God that I thought, okay, I want to sign on to a relationship. And it wasn't just a get out of hell free card. I recognized that this was something that changes the way you live and you make choices about it. And it's not just doing what we're supposed to do, like that verse says, as much as having an actual relationship with a God that wants to relate to us. And because of that, we're able to have him walk with us on that journey.
I love it. Now, your book, I Wished He Had Come With Instructions, The Woman's Guide to a Man's Brain, instantly I picked it up with a little bit of skepticism, as you would guess maybe every man would. And I'm wondering how does this book differ from other books about marriage?
Well, part of it is it's technically not a book about marriage, though that's what most people use it for. I think it's because I've been so interested in the topic, and I looked around to see what other books had been written, and most of them were written by women. And that got me thinking. I thought, you know, that's okay, but it's a woman's perspective telling what it's like in a place she's never been. I've never been inside a woman's brain, and she's never been inside a man's brain. And so I thought we really need something that comes from a male perspective. I thought, I've lived inside this brain for a long time. My wife reminded me, though, as I was getting started, she said, you know, you're not really in a position to give advice to women about what they should do, because you haven't been in their brain either.
Mm-hmm.
So what I did was write it more as a tour guide. Mm-hmm. It's like, you know what? I've lived here for a long time in this brain. I just want to show you around. Let's take a trip. We'll take a journey. I'll show you the high spots and where the scenic lookouts are and the toxic waste to avoid and where the wild animals and the quicksand. And,
mm-hmm.
and you're going to have your own journey with a man, but I'll just give you an idea of the landscape, and then I'll kind of be there just to talk you through it.
Okay, Mike, let's start a little bit about just the brains and how they work. I know the book said that men have approximately 6 times the amount of gray matter, which instantly sounds like a brag, but it doesn't necessarily mean that, because women have nearly 10 times the amount of white matter in their brain, which is the things that allows them to make connections and connect the dots. So talk about that a little bit.
Yeah, I when I discovered that from fairly recent neuroscience, it was just fascinating, because it means there is a creation link. There's a biological link that shows the differences. Now, and every man is unique. We can't put anybody in a box and say this is the way men are. But in general, you know, we use our largest muscles the most. We use your quads. We use, you know, when we're walking or running. And the same thing with our brain. We use the part of the brain that tends to be the largest. And gray matter is that term that we've used for years. When somebody's smart, we say, boy, they've got a lot of gray matter. And it's true that men have about 6 times more than women do. So they tend to focus on something all by itself. We tend to do one thing and focus on it, and then go to something else and focus on it. And while we're focusing on the second thing, we forgot about the first one,
mm-hmm.
which is why when we're watching sports, it really is hard to pay attention to anything going on around us, because we're focused right there. When we get into a conversation, we can be engaged in that conversation, but we left the sports behind for 30 or 40 seconds. But the white matter is the connective tissue, like you said, in a brain
mm-hmm.
that connects every part of the brain to every other part. And women have about 10 times more of that, which is why when they're in conversation, a man tends to be very straightforward. He thinks of one thing. He's not making all those connections. And so when a woman is coming from every different part and bringing in all the details, sometimes he's not being quiet because he's aloof or withdrawing. He just doesn't know what to do with all those pieces, because he doesn't put the puzzle together. He's looking at one piece in the puzzle. She's describing all the pieces in the box.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not that one's bad and one's good. It's just different. It can get a little frustrating, though, if we don't know that.
Yeah, Mike, you say in the book that men are just tall boys. What does that mean? And how can we help women understand that?
Well, I wanted to make sure that I was looking at some fairly solid research. And one of the things I saw repeatedly is that you can take a boy, actually a boy or a girl, but in the case here we're talking about men, you can take a boy at the age of 6 and look at his temperament, kind of how he looks at life, his approach to life, and get a pretty good idea of what he's going to be like when he's 60. Now, he's going to grow, he's going to change, and there's going to be all kinds of things that happen. It's not like he's stuck, but the basic wiring has pretty much gotten into place. That temperament is what you're going to see when he's 60 years old. So now you've got a kid on the playground, and he is, you watch how he plays, and he's always saying, "Mommy, watch, you know, swing me, read to me, can I come too?" Because little boys want to be known. They have this innate need to be loved, which we all do, and they want to be respected. But what's interesting is when they grow up, that hasn't changed. And so a man in a woman's life, he wants to be known, and he wants to be loved, and he wants to be respected. That really hasn't changed. But where he really wants it the most is from the most important woman in his life. He wants to be loved, known, and respected by her. He wants to be her hero.
Mm-hmm.
And all the stuff that goes with that.
Are men just black holes of need? I mean, because I know that, you know, even when you're 6 years old, you want your parents to notice you. You know, watch me do this, watch me do that. They're just obsessed about having eyes on them. So if these boys grow up and become men and they still want to be noticed, what does that say about men and their need to be affirmed or noticed or respected?
I think the black hole is probably accurate, but it sounds negative.
It does sound negative.
Well, yeah, because it feels like it. Well, then will it ever end? And I think mm-hmm. the answer is no, because God made them that way, that all of us have that need. That's what draws us to him, is mm-hmm. we have that need to be loved. And when it's not met, then there is a gap there. There is a black hole that has to be met somehow. And we say, well, the answer is Jesus. But he's given us each other.
Mm-hmm.
And he's made us to live in community to meet those kinds of needs. I don't know that it's necessarily just a guy thing. It's we all have that.
Mm-hmm.
But specifically for men, it's the thing that provides, I think for a man it provides the fuel that helps us function. When we feel like there's a woman in our life that actually believes in us and actually likes us. We know she loves us, but if she likes us, it's like it serves that need inside of us, and it gives us the fuel to be able to do what we need to do to meet her needs and just to function as a man.
Mm-hmm. All right, this is a subject that we're going to have a lot of fun with today. We've got 5 copies of his book to give away, of Mike Bechtel's book, I Wished He Had Come With Instructions, A Woman's Guide to a Man's Brain. If you want to be eligible to enter the drawing to get one of those, email aaron@myfaithradio.com, aaron@myfaithradio.com. Make sure you put your name and address in the email so we know if you win, where to send it. We're going to take a little break. When we come back, lots more with Mike Bechtel. You're listening to Live the Promise. Bill Arnold in for Susie. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Live the Promise. Bill Arnold in for Susie. I feel like the Las Vegas act that has to talk real fast today because there's so much material we have to cover because we got Mike Bechtel on the phone and we're talking about I Wished He Had Come With Instructions, his book, The Woman's Guide to a Man's Brain. And Mike, let's talk about how men view their partnerships with women. Men want a partner, not another mom. And basically men are thinking, if you want to work on the relationship, I'll be happy to do it as long as you don't dictate the terms, but we do it together.
Yeah, I think men have that basic drive to accomplish something and make it happen. We have a drive to win. But the tendency is for some people to think, well, that means I have to win over someone, like their wife. But they do have that need to win, but they'll share it with that woman. They don't have to win over her. They have to win with her. And I had one woman tell me once, she said, well, does that mean I have to be a cheerleader and get out the pom-poms? And, you know, that feels weird to do that all the time. But it's a need that a man has. And it can be little things. Just catching a man doing something right can really provide that fuel. We moved into a new house probably 9 years ago. Well, not not new, but it was a previous home. And one of the things we noticed right away was that they had put in baseboards, but they hadn't been painted. And so, you know, you move into a new house, the first thing you think is, well, of course, we need to do that. Mm-hmm. But 9 years later, I didn't do it. And one day, my wife was gone for the day, and in one of the guest room, I thought, you know what, I'm just going to paint those baseboards. And part of it is because I wanted to do it, but I also wanted her to come in and notice. Mm. And I wanted her to tell me that I had done a good job because I knew what that would feel like. But I've also learned that if we're going to do this in partnership, I can't wait for her to notice and hope she notices, because I'll be disappointed if she doesn't. So when she got home that day, she walked in the door and I said, hey, could you come in the guest room and just ooh and ah for a couple minutes over the baseboards that I painted? And she said, yeah, give me 3 minutes. Let me put my stuff down. So she came in the bedroom. And, of course, she said, ooh, ah. And then it was just fun. But she said, you know what, that really changes the whole look of the room. You did a really nice job on that. Thanks for doing it. And I thought, you know what, it was playful. Well, we could win together. And it was something that I didn't wait for her and try and hint. It's a partnership, mm-hmm. and we do this together.
You weren't going to sit around and wait for your attaboy, were you?
No, it goes the other way, doesn't it?
That
a lot of times women want to, they will hint, hoping their husband will do something, and he doesn't get the hint. And I think it's really important that direction, especially since men tend to be focused on one thing. For a woman, she'll come out and say, I am so tired of just cleaning up the kitchen. And in his mind, he's thinking, well, come sit down for a while and rest. But what she's thinking is, you need to come out and help me. But if she could say something like, you know what, I am so tired of cleaning the kitchen. Could you give me 5 minutes and help me unload the dishwasher? That would mean so much.
Yeah.
You know what, that didn't occur to him. And when he hears it, it gives him something he can do to love his wife. And so I think the expectations and just assuming that they should get it goes both directions.
And I'll say, you know, on behalf of men, if men say they're going to do something, ladies, they're going to do it. You don't have to remind them every 6 months.
It may be 2 years before they do it,
exactly.
But it never leaves.
It'll get done. All right, let's talk about the way men so often perceive the woman in their life and how she looks and how their definition of looking good is maybe different from the man's definition of looking good.
Yeah, I think that's one of the things I did. I talked to a lot of different men and just interviewed them to say, what do you wish that women knew? Because there's things that men understand, men think that their wives don't necessarily realize. And that's one of them, is that most men think their wife is a lot prettier than their wife does. And they want to compliment them. And they want to tell them, like, they look nice, but so often they do it, and their wife will respond, well, no, this is just something, you know, this isn't, I don't look that great. They put it down. And he's trying to tell her, you really do look attractive to me. And she thinks it has to be with makeup and how she dresses and everything else. But, you know, the man picked this woman to marry. And it was because, part of it was because of the attraction. And it tends to be there. And we think that the woman is a lot prettier than they do sometimes.
Mm-hmm. Okay, in the book you talk about just the way men and women have been almost socialized from the beginning, where boys think vertically and women think horizontally. Explain those differences.
Yeah, most girls, when you watch them play, like on the playground, they're playing out a story. They're playing house. And there's somebody that may be the mom, and then they're assigning roles, and they're making sure everybody's taken care of, and this person does that. And so they're working together. So it has to do with relationship and community. You put guys together, you put boys together, and they're playing. It's always about who is stronger, who's better. Or that's why the stereotype of saying, well, you know, my dad can beat up your dad. I don't know how often that actually happens, but it's more of a vertical thing. We tend to be positioning ourselves with other men, and most men, because they want to win, we don't want to be dependent on other men. It probably needs a therapist, but I know that if I need a tool, that I've got a friend who has every tool in the world, and he just lives about two blocks from me. And he always told me, he said, if you ever need to borrow a tool, don't go out and buy it, just come ask. And several months later, I needed a tool. And my first thought was, I got to go to Home Depot. And I mentioned it to my wife, and she said, well, just go borrow it from Al. He said you could use his tools. Everything inside of me just said, I don't want to do that, because that means I'm dependent on him. And I thought, how crazy is that? He's one of my good friends. But I thought, then if I need the tool again, I'm going to have to go a second time. It just feels better to have the tool myself. And so we tend to be positioning ourselves at, you know, where are we? It's just the way that it's that drive to succeed. And that's why men don't ask for directions. We want to be able to figure it out ourselves. Unless you can do it on their cell phone and they're using their GPS, then they have technology, so it's okay.
Mm-hmm. You know, Mike, you need to attend my half-day seminar because I can help you, because you don't only ask Al for the tool, you ask Al just to do it. That's what I would instruct you in my half-day seminar. So that's
okay. I've just written that down. I'll keep you on speed dial here.
Yeah. So I was sick that day in ninth grade when they took all the boys into the gym and taught them how to do stuff. So I've always felt really bad about that. So if I have a neighbor named Al and he's got the tools, you can better believe I'm going to go down and ask Al to help. So,
well, call me. I'll hook you up with him.
Yeah. So men communicate so uniquely. I mean, we have a tendency of telling we love each other by saying really mean things. And women just look at us and go, I can't believe you talk to him that way. And I go, well, that's because I care about him and I love him. And women couldn't conceive of that. We're very different in how we communicate, aren't we?
Yeah, it's very much so. And I think we look at each other through the other one's filters. And so a woman can look at a man and say, how can he be so rude? Because she knows that if she said that, she would be rude. And so she's horrified by it. But it's the way that men communicate. And part of it goes back to that directness where we say what we're thinking. So if a man says, I'm hungry, a woman may interpret that to say he wants me to fix him something. And then she thinks, well, why do I have to fix it? Why can't he fix it himself? When really he may have just been stating a fact. I'm hungry.
Mm-hmm.
And it goes the opposite direction too. If they're in the car and the wife says, do you want to stop for dinner? And he says, not really. Well, now she may interpret that as saying he doesn't care about how tired I am. Why do we have to go home and fix that? I really wanted to go out, but he's not picking up on that.
Mm-hmm.
But he took it as a question. Do you want to stop for dinner? And he said, not really.
Mm-hmm.
If she were to continue and say, it would be great if we could, you know, I'll pay or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
It gives a chance to have real communication, because they're just looking, when we look through our own filters at what the other person is saying, and listen to a man's words through a woman's filters, it will almost always have a disconnect.
It's kind of tiptoeing around stuff, isn't it? Not just being direct. Hey, I don't want to cook tonight. Yeah. Let's go eat. Let's go out.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. If you want to get involved in the conversation today, if you have a question for Mike, give us a call at 1-877-933-2484. And if you want to get in the drawing for one of his books, email Aaron at myfaithradio.com. You will get in the drawing. Make sure you put your name and address in there. We're going to take a short break and be right back. You're listening to Live the Promise. Bill Arnold in for Susie. Be back in a minute. Welcome back to Live the Promise. Bill Arnold in for Susie. I'm talking to Mike Bechtel today. He's written a book called I Wish He Had Come With Instructions, The Woman's Guide to a Man's Brain. And Mike, when it comes to men in the romance department, women have a definite advantage on this one. They spend a lot of time thinking about it more, I believe. And we see what goes on in the movies and on TV, and men can have a tendency of feeling inadequate pretty fast.
Well, I think it's one of the big stereotypes is that men are not romantic. And if we compare them with TV and the movies, that would probably be true. And I think men really want to be romantic. It just comes across differently. So for when a man watches a romantic movie, which he may if he's forced, but part of the reason he doesn't want to do that, he's into the action movies, he wants to be the hero. But you notice when he does that in those action movies, he almost always wants to be the hero because there's a love interest. There's some woman that he wants to do this for. So it's always got that part of it. But when you watch the handsome leading men and the things that they've been scripted to say, a man watches that and feels like a schmuck. It's like, there's no way I could say that or do that. It seems so foreign and so artificial. And so he doesn't say anything. And he feels like, well, that's what romance looks like. I can't do it. And a woman needs to recognize that a man does want to be romantic, but he does it in different ways. Usually men will do things, and it's their way of showing it. We do need to work on our ability to say it. But if I go out and wash my wife's car for her and surprise her, I'm doing that because I care for her. If I go get the brakes fixed, it's because I care about her safety. It's my way of showing her that. And that's why I usually say the simplest thing is if you're watching TV and if the man actually hands you the remote, the best response for a woman at that point is to say, thanks, I love you too. Because that was big for him, especially if it's in the middle of a game.
Or are you having a stroke?
Well, yeah, and it could be the same thing.
Exactly.
But to be able to do that, I think men are very romantic, but it's a different language. It's expressed totally differently than what we see on TV.
Men definitely want to be the hero, and your point is so well taken. If they watch an action movie, there's always some, you know, object of interest in the movie that they're willing to risk their life for. They're trying to rescue a woman from a situation or protect them or put their life on the line for them, and that feels empowering to men.
It does, and I think it's the way we're wired. You see it with, like, my grandkids. They were in softball, and my granddaughter, when she was playing softball, in between the innings when they're all in the dugout, they're helping each other find the batting helmets. They're making sure everybody can find their glove. They're talking. They're in little groups. They're doing everything. And then I wandered over to where my grandson was playing, who was 6 years old, was playing t-ball, and noticed that nobody was talking. They were just spitting, and they were having spitting contest. And I thought it's, but they were really into the spitting contest, and it's because, you know, they want to win. And I think about when Captain Sully brought down the plane in the Hudson River. Just went to that, saw that film last week, and when he brought that down, he was a hero. And I think a lot of men inside, we thought, you know what, I wish I could have been him. I wish I could be the one to do something like that. We're captivated by that. But we know that we're not going to have that opportunity. For the average person, we're not going to be able to save 155 lives by something like that. But Captain Sully didn't either. It was just an ordinary day for him, and he happened to be in a situation where he could do that. But I think the way it plays out for us, we know we're not going to go out and save the world or do something that will be on TV. But if we can be a hero at something and our wife recognizes that, for most of us, that's enough to give us what we need in that hero category. We're important to our wives. We mean something to them. They actually care for us, and they see us in that way.
Mike, this is interesting when you talk about what romance looks like, and maybe there's a caller out there that'd be willing to call in and say, this is what romance looks like to me. But you were talking to several female friends, and some of their perspectives were things like, I don't care what he does as long as it shows that he loves me, that he accepts me just the way I am, that he understands that for better or worse stuff, because I'm not always the most lovable, but he hangs in there with me. So these are things that make a woman feel very loved. I'm just wondering if there's any listeners out there today that want to call in with what they consider to be what makes them feel loved. We'd love to hear it. Let's move on to what I think is the big one, which is a chapter in your book called Conflict Without Combat. That's a great chapter. I read it more than once. And it's talking all about anger and how you can have conflict resolution without it turning into combat?
Well, I think conflict is obviously a healthy part of any relationship, but that doesn't mean fighting, because it's so easy for us to have something happen and suddenly the other person becomes the enemy and we're fighting each other instead of what the conflict was. When we need to think about how do we face this together, that we really are a team, two became one. And I remember an illustration once that we talked about how if there's a problem and it gets between us, it always puts on pressure. If we let it get between us, it puts the pressure in between us and it pushes us apart. But a healthy relationship, we see the pressure, but we get together inside of the pressure. We let the pressure push us together, so we're facing it as a couple. It's not who's right and who's wrong. It's like, what's the issue we need to deal with here, and how are we going to respond to this? And so it just opens up the possibilities when we do that. And that's why some men are driven by anger. Some men are driven more by fear. It's not a hard and fast thing, but we tend to lean one way or the other, that people that are driven by anger tend to go after an issue and try and fight into it, whereas people that are driven a little bit more by fear may try to withdraw and disconnect from the conversation. But if we recognize the reality, we can talk about what that looks like. What do we do when you're feeling that? How can we work together? It's a great place to start conversations.
Mm-hmm. And obviously, communication is important, but men will stop talking for very specific reasons, because that's how the male brain works. Let's talk about some of the reasons why a man will stop talking. For one, he only focuses on one thing at a time. So if you bring in all kinds of variables, his brain might just shut down, especially if he's feeling attacked.
Yeah, I think that's very true. And in fact, it goes back to any type of a conversation. If there's an issue that's important, a woman feels strongly about it, she may bring in 12 different things that relate to it, whereas a man needs to take one of them at a time and just focus with that. And plus, I think we're limited because of that ability to focus on one thing. If the conversation goes too long, it doesn't mean we're disinterested or we're just giving up. It means we actually have reached our capacity to be able to process several things at a time. We just may need a break. My wife and I have learned to use the timeout signal, like in football. And if we do that, it's not an offensive thing. It just means, let me catch my breath. Let's come back in 20 minutes and talk some more.
Mm-hmm.
Or those types of things. It's because, like, I can go out to lunch with a friend. My wife will go out to lunch with one of her friends. And then I'll come back and say, how was your lunch? And she will tell me sentence by sentence who said what, what the response was. She'll give me the whole conversation. In fact, I've told her sometimes I think her description of the lunch took longer than the lunch did because she's giving me every detail.
Mm-hmm.
And then she asked me, she says, well, how did it go with so-and-so? How was your lunch? And I say, well, it was good, like really good.
And that's it. And
she said, well, what'd you talk about?
I don't know.
Stuff. Yeah.
Junk?
And I seriously
stuff and
don't
junk?
Know because – Yeah.
Yeah.
Because I was, in the moment, I was fully engaged with that person. It's not that I didn't care, but I was fully engaged with them. Now I'm away from that, so I'm off of that that platform, and I'm onto something else. It's really hard to remember the details.
Mm-hmm.
It's not that I don't care. It's just the way we're wired.
And it goes back to the female brain that has 10 times more white matter, which can connect the dots faster. So men don't process information quite as quickly as women can, and women can build a case more quickly around any issue. And all of a sudden, men can feel overwhelmed, and they can feel defenseless. This is what your book says. And they have more weapons than men, and they can all of a sudden feel naked and defenseless.
Well, I think that's why we shut down.
Yes.
Because when it's coming from so many different sides, we don't know where to go with it because there's so much. It's like I don't have enough armor to either protect myself, which is just the way it feels, or I don't know how to respond, and so we just clam up. It's like when your computer freezes. It
mm-hmm.
just doesn't work because there's too many things going on at once.
So, and men have this need to always be winning, which is not what you want to do in relationships, of course, and sometimes silence gets you out of the game, removes you temporarily, so at least you won't lose. So men will go dark for a while. And go into their cave or their garage and try to figure out a way to come up with an answer.
And you know what? I think a healthy thing for a man to learn is to be able to say, you know what? I just need some space. Right now, I'm not able to respond. I need to just process a little bit, but also just to get a break. I'm going into my cave. I will be back. And I think that phrase, I will be back, gives the woman hope. It's like, okay, he's not just disappearing. It's like he does need a break. And then we'll talk about this some more. And then make sure it actually happens. It's a little thing we can do to meet our wives' needs.
Mm-hmm. And is there anything else you can say in the meantime? Like, I want to be very respectful to you. I want you to be happy. And I can do it in the best way possible if I get some time alone here.
Yeah, and I think probably the time to talk about that is when there's no conflict. Have this kind of a discussion during a conversation at Starbucks where we're just relaxing and talking about, so how do you handle when you're really upset with me? What goes on inside of you? Just ask each other and have a chance to talk about, so what do you need? How my wife has often said, when this happens, what would be a way that I could respond that would give you what you needed? And sometimes I'll just say, to be able to do the timeout signal, which has nothing to do with you. It just means I've reached my limit. I need a break. And then we talk about what that break looks like. I need a break so that I don't hurt you, so I can think of my response. I don't want to just react. I want to have a real conversation. So those are just real things we can talk about out loud.
Mm-hmm. Is there a certain language that men have that women would be at an advantage if they learned how to speak more male, for lack of a better way of putting it? Is there lingo that if they used with us, it would help us tremendously?
Well, there's some little things that make up that language, like not using absolutes. To say, you never listened to me. Something more healthy is to say, you know, when you did that, here's how I responded. It may not be about you, but here's what happened inside of me when you said that. Something as simple as telling him that you like him. He knows that you love him, but to be able to just tell him sometime, you know, I really like you today. That's huge for a guy to hear, because it means I want to be with you. I'm attracted to you. Things like focusing on solutions. That's big for a man because of that, with the way his brain works. Keeping it short in those discussions. Not bringing up the past. Keep it current. And I think one of the big things is to remember he's your friend. He's not an enemy.
Mm-hmm.
That your partner's in this. And to be able to really capitalize on that.
Mm-hmm. Mike, when we were talking about the different ways that we're wired. And I've heard this expression, and I think you mentioned it in the book, where it says, when mama's happy, everybody's happy.
Mm-hmm.
And I always kind of snickered at that a little bit, because I thought, well, isn't it mama's job to make herself happy as well? Obviously, it's important that we all cooperate as much as we can, but it puts a lot of pressure on everybody else to try to make mama happy so the rest of the world can be happy. Comment on that.
Yeah, I think it's not so much that mama needs to be happy, but that's an understanding that I think most people have had that experience, that if the mom in the house is upset, then things just don't go right. It's like, so we need to make, and some guys have grown up in an environment where in order to keep their mom from getting upset, they learned how to negotiate and how to use humor or change the subject or do something else. It was all about how do you keep them happy. But I think we really can't make someone else happy. But a man wants his wife to be happy. He wants her to be happy with him,
mm-hmm.
with herself. We really want our wives, we want the best for our wives. And that includes how they feel and that happiness.
Yeah.
But we can't make that happen. It's a proactive thing. That's what my book, People Can't Drive You Crazy If You Don't Give Them the Keys, was about, is that it's we have responsibility for ourselves. We can influence other people. We can do everything we can to make it easy for them, to make it simple, but they may not change. We can't make our happiness dependent on what they do, because that's their responsibility.
Yeah. All right, Mike, we got to take a little break. When we come back, we have one more segment with Mike Bechtel. Thanks for being with us today on Live the Promise. Bill Arnold in for Susie. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Live the Promise. Hope you're enjoying our conversation today with Mike Bechtel. He's written a book called I Wish He Had Come with Instructions, The Woman's Guide to a Man's Brain. And yes, we have brains. Isn't that right, Mike? Stand up for me a little bit here. I want to spend the last segment of the show talking about the four different styles of conflict management. Kind of, can you go through what they are and how we can use that for better and more effective communication?
You know, I think there's so many different models out there of temperaments and how they work. And people have seen like the Myers-Briggs, and they've seen Gary Smalley's stuff about the animals, where you have the lion and the beaver and the golden retriever and the otter. And they're fun. We can do some things around that. So this particular part of the book, it wasn't necessarily scientific, but I thought about two sets of factors. And one we mentioned a little bit earlier, which is most men lean towards anger or fear. They tend to operate in those two areas, one way or the other. At the same time, you've got introverts and extroverts. And so you put those together, it comes up with four different personality types. Because someone who is an extrovert or an introvert, it doesn't mean that an introvert is shy. It's how they process information and where they get their energy. Whereas an extrovert tends to think faster. An extrovert tends to think by talking. An introvert tends to think first, then talk. So they process, which is why when an introvert and an extrovert are in conflict or communication, it's always frustrating for the introvert because they can't come up with quick answers the way the extrovert does. And it feels like, well, I lost that conversation because they think of the perfect response about 10 minutes later. Oh, I should have said this. I should have said this. And so recognizing those differences. So if you have someone who, if you have a man who tends to be more on the anger side, which means he pushes forward, and he's an extrovert, that means he's going to be popping out a lot of logical answers. What about this? What about this? And so working with that kind of a person, you want to ask questions. Don't take what he says as his final opinion, because he's probably shaping those ideas as he says them.
Mm-hmm.
So ask questions on what it means. If you've got a fear-driven extrovert, then you've got someone who may withdraw because they're verbal, but they're saying something, but they're afraid to bring up the real issue. So they may be talking but withdrawing in terms of saying what they really want. And so to be able to listen deeply to somebody like that for the emotions over the words, try and pick up what's really going on behind that. If you've got an introvert that's driven by anger, then it's a matter of acknowledging and giving him time to process. He's frustrated. He's angry. And he probably can't say what he's thinking. It won't come out right. He needs time to put together what his thoughts are. Give him some space. Let him come back, and then he'll be able to express it if he's had a chance to put the words in order. And if you have a fear-driven introvert, their tendency is to withdraw completely. And so this is the time to remind them that you're a team. You really want to work with them. You want to know what they're thinking and feeling. Make it safe. Give them time, and not to pressure them for an immediate decision. They need time to process, and then they'll almost always come back. But it's that teamwork approach that says we're in this together. So we don't want to back him into a corner and force a man to express his feelings, because most of the time guys don't know what they're feeling at the moment. They feel it, but they can't put it into words.
Mm-hmm.
Usually it's better to ask a man, what are you thinking,
mm-hmm.
instead of what are you feeling? He can probably go with that.
Yeah. So is it safe to say that men make men better, and iron sharpens iron, and men need to continue to have strong male relationships to grow just as men?
Yeah, I think because we need other men in our lives, and we need women in our lives, because they bring different things. And to have those strong relationships, and a woman needs to recognize it will make her husband stronger if he can spend time with some quality men. And if he has that opportunity, because it shapes him and it shapes them. He'll be stronger for her if he has the chance to do that.
Because men usually, I think you pointed this out in your book, they're not horribly afraid of disagreeing with each other, whereas they might be a little bit more reluctant to disagree with a woman.
Well, with a man, a lot of times because we're in those boxes, if we're having a disagreement, we're in the disagreement box. That's right. What we're focused on right now.
Right.
And as soon as it's over, then we move on and we talk about changing the oil in the car. And we have moved from one, so we don't carry it with us. It's like we expressed our opinions. We disagreed. We both think the other person is wrong. And it's like, okay, now we move on. Now let's talk about football.
Mm-hmm.
And they seriously aren't hanging on to it. And it's not damaging the relationship, whereas sometimes women are thinking, well, but you had that disagreement. You know, it's what are you feeling now that it's over? It's like, I don't know. I'm fine. So it's just the differences in how we process.
Mm-hmm. Do you talk to men when you go to lunch about your marriage and your wife? And do you try to talk about that, or is that something that doesn't come easily to you?
I do. I don't tell any dirt.
Right.
I don't tell anything that's naked. I could say, you know, yeah, we've struggled with that too, but I don't share anything that I wouldn't share with her sitting there.
Mm-hmm.
She does the same thing, but I found it's healthy, especially if I'm just asking questions and they're going through something. You know, there's that, I guess you'd call it empathy. It's just, I have experienced the same kind of thing. I don't have answers. And I'm learning that most relationships, male or female, work better when we don't listen to someone and then give answers. It's usually best to just listen, let them talk, because, you know, there's been a lot of times, you know, we'll sit with somebody and have a conversation with them. They do all the talking. We just listen. And then they go away and tell someone else what a great conversationalist you were.
Mm-hmm.
We didn't say anything. You just listen. But it gave them a chance to process. And most guys don't necessarily have that.
Mm-hmm. Because men are fixers, Mike. Give us a 60-second counsel as to what we can walk away with today that we can improve upon in our relationships.
I think for both of us, for men and women, to recognize the reality of some of these differences, and not to, because the tendency, I think, is if we don't understand, let's say if a woman doesn't understand how a man operates and what he's thinking, there's a tendency to say either we need to cope with it or we need to fix the man. We need to change him, or we need to cope with it. And I've seen a lot of women's books that are written around that idea. How do you put up with your husband? How do you manipulate or negotiate?
Aren't they in the fiction section?
I think the nonfiction section is where the one is about embracing the differences.
Right.
It's like, yeah, we think each other is crazy, and to some degree we probably are, but we're just different. I think the biggest walk away is let's talk about what those differences are and not try and explain why it's right or wrong. Just if we can recognize with each other those differences, we can capitalize on that and really build some world-class relationships.
Mm-hmm.
We're trusting each other enough with it.
Mike, I really loved your book. I read the whole thing, and I'm going to hang on to it and look at it again. But I know today there's people out listening to the show that are in the middle of a very difficult relationship, and this stuff has triggered all kinds of stuff in their brain. So would you close the show by praying for those people that are listening right now?
I sure would. Father, we're grateful that you give us relationships, and those relationships always get tough, but for some it's tougher than others. The book was written about healthy men and healthy relationships, but I pray for those that are in relationships that are really struggling, where there's tough things that are going on, and they need a touch from you. They need a touch from other people in their lives, but they also may even need the professional touch of someone that they can go to really help sort out those deep-seated issues. You've given us that ability to draw from each other. And I pray for hope. I think that's my biggest prayer for everyone today as they're listening, is just that you'll give hope that it can be different than it is if it needs to improve from there. Help us all to move to a higher level on this. We're grateful. Thank you in Jesus' name. Amen.
Thanks, Mike. You've been great. Mike's book,
appreciate it.
I Wished He Had Come With Instructions, A Woman's Guide to a Man's Brain. We'll put that up on the web at myfaithradio.com. You've been a great guest, and we have loved our conversation with you today. Stay tuned for Hour 2. It's coming up in just a minute. Susie will be on board. Say again?
She'll be talking with Philip Nation about
Philip Nation. There we go. Thanks, Matt. Have a great day.